Let's do this. Woo! Ring the bell. This is Between the Ropes.
Oh, you're going for the dirt, for the behind-the-scenes stuff.
It's time to get Between the Ropes. Between the Ropes.
He's Mike Bennett, one half of the IWGP Tag Team Champions of the Kingdom, along with Matt Taven. A very busy week for Ring of Honor. Tuesday and Wednesday, War of the Worlds 2015 in Philadelphia. Then Friday and Saturday, it's Global Wars 15 in Toronto. Mike, thanks for the time. How's everything going?
No, everything's great. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
How long does it take you to get over jet lag?
It depends on how long I'm gone for. This last trip or a few trips has been kind of crazy because we literally in like the last month or so we've gone from Germany to Japan and then to the UK and then back to Japan. And so this last time we were in Japan, I literally at one point looked at Maria and was like, I just don't know what day it is. I cannot for the life of me pick up what day it is because I didn't know if it was Saturday or Friday because it was Friday back in the States, but I think it was Saturday in Japan. So I looked at her and I was like, you're going to have to help me out with this one because I don't know for the life of me. But, you know, it really just depends. That the one time we did our tour over there in Japan, when we got back, it took me a good week and a half to really get back on schedule because I was just waking up at 3 o'clock in the morning when I was back home and both me and Maria would be wide awake, and I'd be like, all right, well, I'm not going back to sleep, so we might as well go downstairs and eat some food, and we'd eat some food, and then by 9 o'clock in the morning, we'd both be exhausted again, so then we'd sleep till about 12 or 1 o'clock in the afternoon, and then wake up, and so, you know, it really just depends. Each trip has really been different for me.
Well, it's not good news, then, that you've got a busy week ahead of you, because it's going to take you a week to recover, because you're going right back on the road to do these shows.
Yeah, no, it's luckily we got back from Japan last Tuesday, so we've been pretty good with recovering, but now, because we don't usually wrestle during the week. The only time I really wrestle during the week is when we do a tour of Japan or something like that, but usually our week is off and we wrestle on the weekend. So this is going to be a little different to have a show on a Tuesday and a Wednesday. I mean, the Toronto shows are pretty normal for us because it's Friday, Saturday, but these first two shows are going to be a little different, so it's going to be kind of strange adjusting to that.
Yeah, you know what the good thing is that because it is such a big show that it's different for you guys to wrestle on those nights, but at least you know the crowd's going to be there. It's a sold-out show, both of them are, and the crowd's going to be hyped for this as well. So it's not like one of these, hey, you know what, I just want to work as many shows as possible, so I'm working some spot show and, you know, Podunk town, whatever, where 20 people are going to show up.
Yeah, no, and I think you're absolutely right. I think I can, because anytime I have worked during a week in the States, probably for like an indie show or something, the initial thought is, oh, we're running a Wednesday night. There's going to be nobody there. And nine times out of 10, if someone's running during the week, there usually is nobody there. But these shows, you know, they're giant shows. I mean, the guys from New Japan are coming over, so I think every single show is sold out, so it's easier to get up for these shows during the week than some, you know, like you said, some indie town in the middle of nowhere where you're pretty sure there's going to be nobody there.
So where exactly is your tag team title belt right now?
It is sitting on my mantle overlooking my bed. Maria has a giant statue of a frog that's meditating that she had in L.A. that sits on the mantle, and I've now placed my title over on top of him.
So
now it sits on top of him.
Easier to carry that around than the title of love, right?
Oh, so much easier. It's still heavy, but the title of love was just giant, and I don't know why it was so big, but it was maybe because of all the stuff they added to it, but I even think it was big before that. But yeah, it was, once I got rid of that thing, I was extremely happy. This one's way easier, and for some reason it just folds up easier, and it's just a cooler belt, so I think maybe I like carrying this one around a lot more.
I would have loved to have seen the reaction of you going through airports and having your bags checked with the title of love.
Yeah, there were a few times where I get stopped, and like with the IWGP title, it's easy because people will be like, oh, you're a champion. What are you the champion of? And I can be like, oh, a tag team champ. And they're like, oh, what company? And then New Japan. It's an easy process. It's an easy flow of telling people what's going on. But when it was the IDEB, when it was the title of Love, they were like, oh, champion. And then they'd look at it and they'd be like, what are you the champion of? And I'd have to be like, I am the champion of love, sir. So it's a different flow.
So that's the great thing, trying to explain that you are the champion of love. You got a belt with fur around it and everything.
They weren't buying it. A lot of times they were just like, all right, just keep moving. You're not interesting anymore.
Well, that's a good thing, though, because otherwise they're going to sit there if you got a cool belt for the next 20 minutes and ask everybody to come over and take pictures.
Yeah, no, I was happy. I was happy that they were glad to just be like, all right, keep moving, you weirdo.
So what's it been like going back and forth to Japan now? Because especially over this last year where things have really taken off for you and for the team.
Yeah, and it's been the best time of my career. I'm literally having the most fun I've ever had. Because for me, Japan was never really an option for me. I never really thought about it. It was always WWE or bust for me. I started wrestling, when I was 16, and it was always just WWE, get to WWE, whatever you can do. And then once I started with Ring of Honor, my career kind of took a different path of where I wanted to go and what my goals and interests were. But I still, and I don't know if it was more so what I thought or the fact that I was just constantly never being told, I was constantly being told that, you don't wrestle the Ring of Honor style, you don't wrestle the New Japan style, you'll never go there, you'll never go, that's just not what they're interested in. And then when it finally happened and I did go over there and I finally wrestled over there, in my head it was like, wow, this is where I should have always been trying to go from the get-go, this is where I want to be, this is what I love, and it's just, I've had so much fun, like it's my WWE now, like I love going over there, I love wrestling those guys, I love being in front of those crowds. It's been the time of my life, constantly traveling, constantly being in. I mean, I get to sit there and I'm like, Jesus, I'm in Tokyo right now. Like, I'll text my mom and be like, Mom, I just wrestled in front of 15,000 people in Tokyo or Fukuoka or Osaka. So it's really cool. Like, there's not enough good things I can say about it. I've had such positive experiences and I get to do it with my wife and literally one of my best friends in pro wrestling, so it's been so much fun.
And that's one of the things too, that, and it's nothing against WWE, but when people get an opportunity to experience that and you're happy with your career, you've got so many different opportunities like you have right now and you're keeping busy with your work, that I think then, it's great that you want to aspire to WWE, but you found something else that makes you extremely happy, and you sit there and go, you know what, if that ever comes along, that's great, but in the meantime, look at this, and this will probably make me just as happy as anything, that I've reached this goal and now this is a regular part of my career and I'm still, got plenty of years ahead of me.
Yeah, no, and it's like I said, it's something I never planned for this in my career, so I think that's why it's so neat for me, because I think me and Marie always had this conversation. I think when you take the pressure off yourself of saying, I have to get to this place by this age, or I have to do this by this age, that's when you start doing your best work. And I still don't put the pressure on myself. Like, I go over there and it's fun for me. Going over there is exciting and fun. It's not pressure filled. Like, even when they tell me, oh, there's going to be 20,000 people in Osaka tonight, I'm still like, cool, let's go do this. Like, I'm not like, oh crap, I have to be on my game. I'm like, Taven, let's go have some fun. Yeah, I think because I never expected this and now I have it, I think it actually worked out to my benefit in the long run.
What's it like being in Japan and walking down the streets with your wife?
Yeah, it's cool. It's when we're in Tokyo or we're in the bigger cities, people don't miss a beat. Like, they don't look at you any differently than they would. But when we used to go to like the rural towns and the small, like the little farm towns and stuff like that, people kind of look like, oh, you don't belong here, or what's this wrestler doing, or what's this girl with bright red hair doing, or what, they kind of look at you differently. They know something's up. They know that you don't belong, you have to try to, I don't say fit in, but you have to try to just kind of live your life that way and try to deal with the food. Even if you don't like it, you have to try to make it work. And I think to me that has been the hardest time for me, is adjusting to the food, because I'm not a big seafood guy and it's just a lot of fish over there, and so I just had to really try to figure out what I can eat, what I can't eat, And I just know that every time I go over there, the one thing I think about is, oh, I can't wait to get home because I don't want to eat any more fish.
I was going to say, it's not a case of where you smell it and it makes you nauseous or anything like that, is it?
No, not at all. It just, I'm not a big fan of, like, I eat, even back home, I'll eat fish. There's certain fish I'll eat, but like with Taven and Maria, like, they ate sushi when they're in the States. I don't. I never enjoyed it. I never wanted it. So for them, they had an easier time adjusting. But it's still the different kind of foods. There's just not a lot of foods that I'm familiar with. So it's like whenever we're over there, it's like, oh, you see a McDonald's, it's like hitting the jackpot. You're like, thank God, because that's literally all you want to eat.
Because otherwise you're looking at a menu and you don't even know what you're ordering sometimes, or you're wondering what this is that they put in front of you to eat. And
that's exactly what it is. Like, we'll stop at rest stops when we're on tour, and there's like a menu with pictures on it, and literally me and Taven will look at it and we'll be like, all right, we'll take the thing that doesn't look like poo, because the next one looks like poo next to it. So we'll take the one that just looks like it might be chicken, so hopefully it's chicken. And that's kind of how you go about it. And then you take a bite out of it and you're like, oh, that's fish. Crap, that's not what I wanted. And so you just kind of, there's been so many times you just go through it, and sometimes you get what you think you ordered, and other times you're like, that wasn't what I wanted at all.
You know, so many people say it's extremely difficult to work with your wife, and then you're not only doing that, but you're doing it in a business where it's supposedly a big no-no. So why has it worked so well for you and Maria?
You know, I think it's worked so well because we have very similar views on life and on wrestling. I think because, it's hard to explain, but we respect the way we both work, and we respect where we both are in the business. Like, people always ask me, like, is it difficult for the fact that your wife has had so much more success than you? And my answer is always, no, she's my wife, and that's awesome that she's seen success. And I think it's the same way for her. When I have success, she says it's awesome that he has success. Like, we're a unit, we're a group, and we're happy for each other when it works out. And I think we have a lot of the same views about professional wrestling, too. And the fact that it is such a no-no, and the fact that it's so foolish, and wrestling can be so stupid sometimes, and so just like, I think we're both the type of people that can sit back and just laugh at the stupidness that pro wrestling can be sometimes. And we have that view of, like, seriously, we are entertainers. We're not saving the world here, people. So it's okay that we can laugh at this, or it's okay that we can do this, or it's okay that we can do that. I think it's just how relaxed and we're both two very positive people. So I think that plays into a role.
Do you think with the way that times have changed, especially when it comes to the wrestling business, that, you know, couples can make it a little bit more? I mean, everybody is unique in their own relationship, but we've heard these horror stories over the years, but maybe that was just a sign of the times, and it's different from what it is now, and especially the way that the locker room is now.
Yeah, I think it's definitely a sign of the times. I think it just had to take, you know, a few people to be like, you know, no, this is okay. You know, I like to think me and Maria kind of helped push that envelope along and that agenda along, saying like, yeah, this wasn't acceptable, or the locker room really isn't comfortable for a husband and wife to be working together. But let's change that. Let's not make it that way. Let's not make the locker room where it's a frat house, or it's the, you know, the football locker room in high school. Let's make it where it's a profession. And I mean, honestly, we go to the locker rooms now, and Maria is respected and treated like she's been a 20-year veteran. Like, the way the guys talk to her and look up to her, and the way the guys talk to her about their matches, you would think that she had been headlining WrestleMania for the last 20 years. Like, I think that's such a positive in the way wrestling's kind of transforming. And I think it's a positive in the way girls are being viewed in the business. And I think that's probably where it stems from, is that the way girls were viewed for so long in professional wrestling, that to kind of work with your wife was probably a negative, not only on the girl, but a negative on the husband who was bringing his wife to work with. But now it's, you know, I think with like the whole women's movement in professional wrestling, and how successful women can be in wrestling a lot of times more than men, I think it's definitely changing, and I think it's a sign of the times. But I also think it's the guys and the girls who have pushed that agenda along.
And she adds so much when it comes to the team and the entire act. Where do you think you guys would be right now if she was not part of the group?
We would not be where we are without her. She plays such a giant role in everything that we do. Whether it's just putting a match together, whether it's just getting our name out there, whether it's just, I mean, a lot of times she'll get a booking and then she'll get me and Matt to come along with her. So it's like, there's so many things that I think, we couldn't do without her. This whole angle we're doing in New Japan right now, I mean, it's solely based around how she's infatuating Carl Anderson, and that's why me and Taven are scooping up the wins. Like, she's such a key part to everything we do, especially with the Kingdom, and how the Kingdom was formed and how it's going to go forward. I think she played such a role in the success of the Kingdom that, honestly, it would. I think the Kingdom might still be around just because me and Taven have been friends and we still might be a tag team, but I don't think it would be as successful without her guidance.
And it's not even a stretch on her behalf because she is such a distraction to everybody out there. You know?
Yeah, no, it's true. Like, she's such a bubbly personality and such a beautiful person that it's easy to see why she would make two homely looking guys like me and Matt so successful.
You sound like me when I'm talking about my wife.
Oh, yeah. I'm sure Matt appreciates that. That's beautiful, though, and he'll kill me if I told anyone he was ugly. So maybe him and Marie are the beautiful people in the group.
Maybe he should have been carrying around the title of love all along. We didn't know it.
He should have. I think he was a little jealous when I was carrying around the title of love. He didn't have it.
So what's the comfort level been like with the team? Because it's not only, obviously, you've got your wife part of the team, but somebody that you broke into the business as well, and Taven, you know, is part of it. And you guys have been together now known each other for so many years.
Yeah, and that's been so much fun. I started wrestling maybe like 7 years before Taven, and then he started wrestling, and he started going to Spike Dudley School in Fall River that I was helping to train at. And so I kind of, once he started there, me and him just kind of hit it off as friends, and I saw a lot in him, and I was like, all right, you get it. You're not the normal, like, guy that comes in here that just is going to bump around for a couple of months and then quit. I was like, you get wrestling. You're an athlete. You know what you're doing. I kind of took him under my wing, and we started doing a whole bunch of shows together and just traveling the road together. And then when they decided to put us together, it was like, finally, like, this is going to be something special. And when we're out there, it's like two peas in a pod. We know exactly what each other's going to do. It's so easy out there to just kind of flow off what he's going to do and flow off what I'm going to do. And it really took off faster than I expected it to. I knew it was going to be fun, and I knew we were going to have a good time. But, like, the responses the Kingdom has been getting, especially when we went over to the UK and over in Japan, has literally blown my mind. And it's just, I think it's the chemistry that me and Taven have together, and me and Maria, and Taven and Maria. I think it's just the fact that all three of us work so well together. I think that's what really works the best.
So you go to Japan, you're there for a little while, you come back last Tuesday, you get back, and then what's going on? This whole Deflategate with Tom Brady.
It's awful. Maria's so sick of hearing about it. We were driving in the car today, and she's ready to punch the sports talk radio station that I always listen to.
Were you guys in Boston, or where are you at?
We are in Providence right now.
Okay.
Maria's going to school, and we decided that Providence would be a good place for us to crash. It's close enough to Massachusetts, where I grew up, and close enough far away from Massachusetts where, you know, you don't have to have people that you know always around you. So it's a perfect destination for us.
But you're not listening to Boston radio like WEEI, are you?
We listen to Boston radio, the 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Okay, because, I mean, sports talk radio in Boston, especially EEI, that is particularly harsh.
Oh, EEI is really bad. That's why we listen to the Sports Hub. We don't listen to them. I don't really enjoy them. I find them very boring.
Yeah, actually. And it gets out of control very quickly, I think, there. And it's funny because, you know, I looked at that reporter. I heard about it, and they were talking about, well, the evidence points to this, and there was nothing like in extreme or just saying absolutes when it came to that report. And then come to find out, they were like, oh, well, that's kind of lawyer talk, meaning, yeah, they really have evidence, but for whatever reason, they use that jargon. But it's still, I don't know. I look at the whole thing, and I'm still not sold about it. I mean, maybe the ball boys obviously had something to do with it, but I still don't know about Tom.
Me and Marie have talked at length about this because I'm a huge Tom Brady fan. Anyone who follows me on Instagram or Twitter knows about my man crush on Tom Brady. And I have one opinion that I've stuck to the whole time, and that's whether he did it or not, I'm sure he probably had footballs deflated. Every quarterback does it. Every quarterback will grab a football and squeeze it and look at his ball boy and say, all right, this one's too full, take a little air out. And then he'll take another one and say, all right, this one's too flat, put a little air in. They all want them perfect. I think it's just it's typical in football. It's just the way it is. Everyone has their ritual. Everyone goes through it, whether it's illegal or not. I think every quarterback does it, and I think Tom was probably just one of them who did it so in the open and so nonchalant. And I think there was someone who was out to get him, whether it be someone on the Colts or someone on the Ravens or
it was somebody with the Colts.
Yeah, it was just someone who was ready to pounce on Tom Brady, and that's what they're doing. And I think it's really sad because I think in a company right now like the NFL, where they have so many black guys with whether it be Ray Rice beating his wife or whether it be Adrian Peterson beating his child, there's so many guys who are constantly being brought up on domestic abuse or even Aaron Hernandez with murder. You have one guy who's done things by the book constantly, day in and day out, has been the poster boy for the NFL. And I get that there are a lot of fans that don't like him because he wins and constantly wins and constantly wins, and he's married to a supermodel, and he seems to have the perfect life. But that's the guy you want representing your company. And now for something as so small as air in a football, you're going to totally tarnish his name. It blows my mind. Even Maria's pissed. She's yelling. They don't even know for a fact whether they did it, and they're still going to tarnish his name. So it's really sad to me.
So you're telling me the guy that wins a lot with the beautiful wife is not liked very much. It sounds a lot like you.
Oh, go figure. The guy that wins with the beautiful wife is not liked. I think that's why me and Tom have such a good connection. He doesn't know it yet, but we're best friends.
Good. I'm glad to know that. And you know what? The crazy thing about that whole story, too, is why the hell are there different footballs for each team? Why is the NFL
exactly
not just bringing it in and controlling, like, hey, both teams are using the same footballs rather than they each have their own? I don't understand it.
It seems like they were just setting themselves up for something to go wrong. Like, they should have just said the one official bring the balls in and say, these are the balls for both teams. Here's 20 of them, and I will hold on to them. Here we go. Let's play the game.
Yeah. I mean, the NBA used to have that problem because, like, each guy, like Magic, I mean, there's infamous stories of Magic Johnson being 6'9", loved a high dribble. So he always liked it if the ball was a little overinflated. Or Isaiah Thomas up in Detroit was a shorter guy, loved the low dribble. So he liked if the ball was a little underinflated. So you did little things like that. But the NBA has since changed to where they're controlling the basketballs. They're making sure that the hoop is 10 feet tall because there's been instances where it's been a little bit taller, a little bit under. So it's all mandated by the league, and that's the way it should be.
Yeah, and I think I bet after this they're probably going to look into kind of maybe just having one guy control every single football for the entire game. I mean, I don't see why they didn't do that in the first place, but who knows with that league. They're so screwed up right now. I mean, I love watching football, but God, Roger Goodell needs to go. What a waste of space he is.
Yeah, I know, and I'm wondering what this is going to do to Brady's legacy now because he had nothing to do with Spygate. But yet, that's going to be, like, on his watch because of his coach and everything. So now people are looking. You think this guy's, like, the perfect poster boy, like you said, and he's won 4 championships. But everybody's going to talk, or some people are going to believe, he was dirty all along.
Well, to me, the most frustrating part about the whole thing was that forever and just growing up here and knowing how it was, after the 3 that he won before Spygate, everyone was always saying, well, see, Brady hasn't won one since Spygate. Belichick hasn't won one since Spygate. They needed that to win. They needed that to win. Now they finally won one. They got that monkey off their back, and now everyone's just going to say, well, it's because they had deflated footballs. Which drives me nuts because there's no competitive edge that they had. Every team is doing it. So, of course, they're not winning because of these. But in the court of public opinion, because every other teams are losing and every other – like, I've never sat there and said to myself, well, the reason why the Yankees beat the Red Sox in the 2003, you know, Eastern Conference series is because A-Rod was doing steroids or because so-and-so was doing steroids. Or,
right.
No, everyone was doing it. They lost because the Yankees played a better game. I've never sat there and say the reason the Giants beat the Patriots in the perfect season was because so-and-so was cheating. Even if he was, I wouldn't say that. They lost because they lost. But for some reason, when teams lose, other, you know, fan bases need an excuse. So This is just their excuse of saying this is why the Patriots or Tom Brady won't go down as the greatest quarterback. I don't think it'll tarnish his record. I don't think deflated footballs in the long run are going to be the downfall of Tom Brady. I honestly, and I've said this to Maria a million times, I think if they give him a sentence that's unacceptable, I think he's going to come after the league and say, I'm the biggest star you have. I'm going to out Roger Goodell for everything he's worth. If you want to fight, you have a fight at your hands. If there's ever anyone to expose Goodell, it's Tom Brady. So I think they better be careful with that.
Yeah, we'll find out. I mean, supposedly his suspension is going to come down this week, and it sounds like no matter what, he's getting suspended for how many games, that remains to be seen. So, you know, while we're talking about sports, do you read or follow Bill Simmons?
I do, yes. Every now and then I'll read him online or I'll watch him on ESPN. He's leaving ESPN, though, isn't he?
Right. I mean, are you surprised about that? Because the way that it all went down, he's been negotiating for over a year with them. His contract's up in September. And out of nowhere, ESPN decided to get ahead of it and said, hey, we're not bringing him back, you know, when his contract expires.
You know, it doesn't surprise me because I think Bill Simmons is far too smart to be on ESPN. I think a lot of the times ESPN is in the business of entertainment and not so much sports news. So I think he's too much in the business of sports news and the truth as opposed to what ESPN is actually in the business for, and that's help promote whoever's sponsoring them, whether it be the NBA or the NFL or whatever, you know, network affiliate is sponsoring them. And I think sometimes Bill Simmons goes off the reservation by saying, well, this is how I think, even if it doesn't completely agree with what ESPN is saying right now. And I think maybe they were like, well, maybe we don't want someone like that on our staff anymore.
You mean like calling Roger Goodell a liar after they have a $15 billion agreement with the NFL to broadcast Monday Night Football and some playoff games?
Exactly. That's exactly what I mean.
Or going on the opponents, going on the Dan Patrick show last week and saying that Goodell doesn't have the testicular fortitude to be the commissioner of the NFL.
Yes. And I think sometimes ESPN might be like, this guy still works for us? Oh, crap.
By the way, let me come clean about one thing, because you live in Boston, so that means you're a Celtics fan, or you're in near Boston, right?
Yes. So I am a big Celtics fan.
I'm a Lakers fan. Yeah.
That's all right. Both of our teams stink right now. So
you made the playoffs even though your team was below 500.
Yeah, somehow we made the playoffs even though we probably shouldn't have.
Because the East sucks.
Both of our teams are basically irrelevant, so I think we could bury the hatchet until they're relevant again.
Well, the big offseason fight possibly for Kevin Love, if he leaves the Cavaliers, will he go back to the West Coast where he's from, or will he go to Boston where the system seems set up, but now his new arch nemesis, Kelly Olynyk, is there, who tore his arm out of his socket. So
I think he goes to the West Coast. I don't think there's any chance he comes here. He has no reason to. It's different when the team's winning. It's different when the big three were here and guys wanted to come here, but there's no reason to. He'll be playing in the freezing cold. The winters are awful, and he'll be playing for a team that might be good with his, you know, his assistance. So I think he goes to a team that he could possibly, you know, you go to a team like the Celtics that might be good with his assistance, or a team like the Lakers that might be good with his assistance, but at least it's Los Angeles. So, I mean, yeah, I think he'd be foolish to not go to L.A.
Well, the thing about Boston is, though, despite all of the history and all the championships that they've won, unless they already have a pretty good team or they already have a star, it's really tough to attract a free agent to go there.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I remember for so long when the Red Sox were bad and the Patriots were bad and just nobody wanted to come here. for so long. It just was, why would they want to come here? Why would they? I mean, for thank God Tom Brady literally came out of nowhere. Thank God he just popped up, because if not, why would anyone want to come to New England to play for the Patriots? It's cold. There's just nothing here that you really want to see. The winters are terrible. The summers and the spring and fall are fantastic, but a lot of these sports are played during the winter, so why would anyone want to come here?
I think one of the refreshing things talking to you in about more than just wrestling, we'll talk about sports and everything, especially when it comes to sports, you're one of these guys that not only works in the wrestling business, which is filled with conspiracies by some people, but you don't talk about sports having conspiracies. It seems like there's a lot of guys that are in the wrestling business. When they watch sports, they go, that's all fixed. We all know what happened there, you know, or this happened there. And you're not in, it doesn't seem like you're into the conspiracy theory part of that.
No, I think it's because I grew up on sports. There's a lot of us in wrestling who grew up, were athletes. We played sports growing up. We watched sports growing up. Wrestling is kind of weird. It's in a weird kind of phase right now, where not necessarily a lot of guys who are in it are athletes or were athletes growing up or played sports. They kind of like a lot of the generations coming in now read comic books or played video games or watched movies, or they weren't exactly into like the whole sports atmosphere of it. So I think because of their disinterest of sports, they just kind of push it off and say stuff like that, and they try to bury sports or knock sports because they weren't into it growing up. They didn't like it. They didn't watch it, so they're not going to watch football. And when people ask them about football, it's not cool to them. So their initial reaction is, oh, it's just a work. It's just fake. It's this and that.
Right.
As opposed to us who have actually spent our whole lives watching it and saying, no, it's real. You're just not interested in it. It's okay if you're not interested in it. Just don't bash it for something that's not. Don't be that guy.
I always love the people that say, oh, you know, we know who's going to win this game because they want to get to a game 7 of this series. I'm like,
right.
No, we don't.
No, absolutely. If you want to pretend, like I'll sit there and me and Maria will watch football and something will happen. And I'll say, see, that's good booking by Roger Goodell. And I'm just kidding. I'm not
right. Serious.
Like, it's just because I'm so embedded in the wrestling lifestyle that, you know, I'll say stuff like that, and I'll say, oh, they want a game 7 so they can have the big blow-off match. But in my head, it's all tongue-in-cheek to me. I'm just, you know, throwing what I know with wrestling and mixing it with, but I know there's no way you can, I mean, yes, there's betting and there's stupid things that go on, but let's be serious.
Are you surprised that there are some gambling websites that allow people to take bets, especially on WWE?
No, because I think, you know, people will bet over anything and everything and anything they can.
Right.
You know, if you took my dog and said, what's the over under that your dog will poop in 10 minutes? I'm sure people would throw $100 at me, you know? So I think there's just people that want to bet for anything. So honestly, I'm surprised that betting for wrestling hadn't happened sooner, or, you know, in all honesty, I'm surprised that there's not somebody inside of WWE, and there may be, and I don't know about it, but I'm surprised they're not somebody in WWE who's making a killing right now, just throwing money down on who's going to win because he knows the outcome.
That's the whole thing to me that surprises me, is that somebody doesn't know there, and it doesn't mean that they're necessarily doing it straight up, but they contact a friend of theirs and say, hey, put this bet down on me, you know, my behalf,
yeah.
You know, and, you know, let's split it or whatever the case. So.
Yeah, I'm surprised there's not someone who's literally become a millionaire because he's done exactly that. I mean, seriously, you get a job, you figure out what's going on, and you just say, hey, we're going to bet, you know, take the over-under on whatever, or if it's a 50-to-1 odds on this, and just throw $50 down. I think, honestly, I'm surprised. If it's not already happening, I just don't know about it. I'd be very surprised if it's not happening, to be honest.
So you've been with Ring of Honor now going on 5 straight years. You surprised that you've been with the company for so long?
Yes. I was not very much welcomed when I started there by fans, by wrestlers alike. There are a lot of guys in the back that won't admit to it, but they did not want me there because I didn't fit their prototypical Ring of Honor wrestler. There are guys who thought I was there because at the time Kerry Silken was the boss, and they thought Kerry Silken just liked me, and I had, you know, I really had no place on being there. I think at the time I was very surprised. but I don't give up very easily. I don't give in. I especially don't give in to wrestlers who don't think I should be there. Fans are one thing. I can deal with fans, but once a wrestler's like, oh, you don't belong, after I had been killing myself in the wrestling business for 8-9 years before I got signed to Ring of Honor, that's just something you don't do with me. That just tells me, oh, so you want me, you're just looking for me to prove you wrong. And that's what I did. But, yeah, no, I'm very surprised because I didn't, it was a very hard adjustment for me. Now I love being there. There's no other place I'd rather be. I love the guys there. They're all some of my best friends. A majority of the roster went to my wedding and was at my wedding in Chicago. I'd be very surprised if I was there another 5 years. I think there's more I need to do with my career than just Ring of Honor. But I love the 5 years I've been there. But, yeah, I think I'm very surprised I was there 5 years, but I'm glad I was.
Well, what was the biggest beef people had with you coming in?
It was so much that a lot of the guys hadn't heard of me, because a lot of the guys that work for the company were either Midwest wrestlers or friends of a friend. And I had just been wrestling really on the Northeast area, and a lot of them didn't know who I was. And a big thing was that Jim Cornette was a huge fan of mine, and a lot of guys in the company at the time did not like Jim Cornette for whatever reason. Jim Cornette had his own views on pro wrestling, whether you agree with them, whether you disagree with them, they're just his views. And he loved me, and he brought me in as he wanted to push me right away. He brought me in as someone he saw a lot of potential in. And guys were either jealous or envious, or I think a big part of it was the guys who didn't like Jim Cornette for Jim Cornette couldn't say that to Jim because he was their boss. So they just took it out on the next best thing was, oh, the guy Jim Cornette likes the most, the new guy, let's take it out on Mike because he's Jim Cornette's boy. So I think that was a big reason why.
You know, with all the shows that are coming up, obviously you got the two shows, Tuesday and Wednesday, are in Philadelphia, Friday and Saturday. You're going to be in Toronto. What kind of reaction do you think you're going to get from that Toronto crowd?
You know, it's funny. I'm excited to see, because me and Taven were literally just talking about this. We have yet to do a Ring of Honor show since we won the titles. So I don't know what the reaction is going to be. I don't know if people are going to be excited or people are going to hate us even more because now we have won titles in their prestigious New Japan where they, you know, they hold so dearly, and God forbid two guys who can't wrestle just won tag titles in New Japan Pro Wrestling. I think Toronto's usually a fun crowd. They usually, you know, like to play around with us, but I think we'll get a pretty good reaction. I'll tell you what I'm most excited for, the Philly show, where me, Taven, and Cole are finally back in the same ring and the Kingdom's back together. I think that's going to be a very special night, because we haven't been in the same ring since he got hurt, and that's been, I think, since either I don't think we've been in the same ring together since October.
Yeah.
So I am really looking forward to that. Cole is another one who's one of my best friends in wrestling, so I'm beyond thrilled to see the fact that he's coming back. And I can't wait to be there for him.
Yeah, what do you think this has been like for him to have to go through this? And, you know, things are going very well for him at the time, and then, boom, the shoulder injury comes about and puts him on the sidelines.
Yeah, you know, I think it's tough. I think it'd be tough on anyone, but Cole's a very strong-minded person and strong-willed and dedicated. He has to be to get to see the success he's seen at such a young age. But I think he's handled it. We've talked to him for a long time. You know, we always talk to him. Taven always talks to him. I always talk to him. He's had his ups and downs, but I think just like anyone, these kind of moments where you've seen success and you're right at your peak, and then an injury takes it all away from you, I think they're moments that define us. I think they either make or break you. And I think with Cole, it's going to make him, because I don't see Cole being like, oh, I can't do it now. I just can't do it now. You know, oh, this happened and I'm not ready for it. I think it's just going to, I think he's going to come back more angrier, more, you know, better than ever before.
Well, it's an interesting period for Ring of Honor, too, when it comes to TV, because I know you guys got picked up in Dallas, and then the news came down today that looks like Nessun cleared Ring of Honor nationally.
Yeah, I saw that, and that's big. I've been waiting for my parents to be able to watch me up in Massachusetts. So for us being on Nessun, which is a station I grew up on my whole life, I'm excited. That's big news. I think that's really big for Ring of Honor, especially in the Northeast area.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's a big thing to be on a network of that size. So do your parents regularly not watch you? Do you have to send them tapes if they want to watch, or do they watch
at
all?
My mom follows me online. She is constantly seeing what I'm doing. She's always she's got her finger on the pulse of my career, very much so. My dad gets it through my mom. So my dad knows, just because my mom will tell him, hey, Mike's doing this, hey, Mike's doing that. I'm sure if they had Ring of Honor TV, my mom would watch it every time I was on. But yeah, she my mom stays up to date just by constantly reading online. She's always searching my name, following my Twitter, reading about what's going on. Maria's mom does the exact same thing with her. So our moms are very much connected with our careers.
Whose mom is more likely to go after somebody online that says anything negative about their kid?
Oh, that's a good question. Whose mom's more likely to go after someone who says something negative? Okay, so it's definitely Maria's mom. Maria just said her mom's done it before. My mom hasn't yet to do it, so it's definitely going to be her mom.
That's fantastic. So,
yeah, her mom's quiet. Well, my mom's pretty quiet and shy too.
Yeah,
but yeah, her mom. I think her mom's kind of a quiet. But if you mess with her daughter, she'll come at you like a spider monkey.
That's awesome. So, last thing, what's going on with the Wonderland podcast?
It's we just got picked up by Geek Nation, and within the next couple weeks, we will be broadcasting the show on geeknation.com, which is kind of cool because they get a lot of followers and a lot of hits on their website. So yeah, we were just working out the logistics with them, and it's just a matter of time before we launch our podcast on their website, which we're really excited about.
Good for you. I've been wondering where it was at, and I figured something was in the works, so I'm glad to hear that.
Yeah, no, we took some time off to do the wedding and to travel to Japan and do all that stuff, and in the meantime, our manager was kind of floating around different places, and we landed on Geek Nation, and then, we're really excited to do it. We're really excited to be a part of that. The website's really awesome, and they're great people over there, so we're excited to start on Geek Nation.
So you're letting your work life and your personal life get in the way of a podcast for fans. Okay.
Yeah, God forbid.
God forbid.
My life gets too busy for a podcast every now and then.
One more thing. You feeling good about the Red Sox this season?
No, they suck. they have no pitching, and I'm afraid they'll end up in last place again. They have to do some major restructuring. They need pitchers bad, and until they have a pitching staff, they are going to stink for a long, long time.
You got Mookie Betts, though.
They do, and he's awesome. I mean, he is a bright spot in a very dark team. They need they need some pitching really bad.
Well, my Cubs took John Lester from you in the offseason, so.
That's true, and they put in bleachers, which I'm watching on ESPN. So.
Oh, yeah, the bleachers are opening today, aren't they? Yeah.
They are, yeah. They were talking about how the bleachers were opening.
I was just there, and it's weird because my wife, we went to Wrigley Field. My wife was dead set about us not sitting in the bleachers because she went before, and by the end of the game, she was just like, I feel miserable from sitting in a bleacher for 3 hours. So I said, well, don't worry. The bleachers are not even open right now because they're redoing them. So we had normal seats this last time.
I don't think I'd want to sit in the bleachers either.
A great atmosphere to be out there, especially if the team's winning. The crowd gets a little bit more raucous. They have a standing room section in the bleachers now, too.
Yeah, they put that at Fenway Park, too. I once went there. It's not bad. It's a good little. I think I'd like that more than the bleachers. I feel like the bleachers, my butt would start to get numb or hurt.
Maybe.
Maybe if I'm drinking, I could deal with it. But if not, then I just don't think I could go along with it.
Well, there's plenty of that's going on, especially in the bleachers at Wrigley.
So. Oh, yes. Absolutely.
Well, it's a big week for Ring of Honor. Tuesday and Wednesday, War of the Worlds 2015 from Philadelphia. Friday and Saturday, it's going to be Global Wars 15 in Toronto. Not only the stars of Ring of Honor are going to be there, but also stars of New Japan Pro Wrestling. People can find out more about the company and the shows. Just go to ROHWrestling.com, and everybody can follow Mike Bennett on Twitter. It's at Real Mike Bennett. Mike, appreciate the time. Great conversation, and have fun this week, and best of luck as your career goes forward.
Thanks a lot, man. I had a good time. I appreciate you having me on.
The talking is over.
Thanks for downloading Between the Ropes.
Man, you guys are awesome. Thank you.
For more, go to BetweenTheRopes.com and subscribe to Between the Ropes on iTunes.
Thank you.
Have a nice day.